This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
All right, guys, we're back. Episode 7 with Jeremy Albrecht. We've had a good conversation, catching up on some good times, some good memories, talking about life, where we at now, talking about me taking out some lappers. You might have to edit that out, but, you know, and the next thing you know, now I'm looking at this list, this paper, and J-Bone has some notes. And there's some memories on here, so you're going to have to explain what this stuff is. Some of this stuff I know, but... what's up with this list?
Yeah, really, I kind of put some notes down just to jog my memory if we were sitting here doing this show and it went stale, but that hasn't happened, so I didn't really need the list anyway. Like, I was just trying to think, like, man, we have so many things that we have done together that I was like, if I get there and I can't think of anything, that's going to look stupid. I go all the way down there and I can't even remember anything.
But, I couldn't believe you had a list. We're driving down here from the airport this morning. And J-Bone's like, oh, check out this list I got.
Wow. Yeah, I just want to do notes in case I needed them. I was just doing it on my phone.
Well, there's some good.
If you're like, hey, what are we going to talk about? But, you know, it actually has been easy. We just talk about everything we already know.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the old days.
All right.
So the first thing is my wedding. You went to my wedding, which was cool.
100% he's clueless on this one.
Yeah.
You have no idea.
What?
So we had a good time. You were dancing. We had a great time. Like
in Vegas.
Sweating. Do you remember? I have pictures of you sweaty.
Yeah.
We had so much fun. But anyway.
It gets better.
You came to my wedding, my wife and I, not just my wedding, and you didn't pay the hotel bill. Did you know that?
No. You know, no, for real?
I think back then, because everywhere you go, it's paid for by the race.
Yeah, you're just a kid.
By the team. So you came there, you're probably 17 or 18.
Probably
you were 17.
17. Cowie's paying for it.
Yeah, and you just left.
No, for real?
Yeah.
First thing
we laughed about it. My wife and I laugh about it all the time.
Oh, man. Like,
but I look at you
and you
like,
invited me. So I.
That's right.
No, I didn't know that.
That's pretty funny, huh?
Wow.
Like, you think about it, like, now.
On all the things you were going to say, that's not the one I was thinking. I'm like, all right, he's got.
No, I don't have anything except for, you just checked out of your hotel, left, man. And they're like, hey,
that's what you
who's
going to
pay this bill?
I'm like, that's what you do at the race.
I got it.
That was at
Green Valley Ranch.
Yeah, place was awesome on there. You probably had some
funny, right?
Pool is wrong. Thought. Yeah, I didn't know. It was not on purpose, clearly.
I knew it wasn't, but I love that that's the first
damn.
On the list.
Yeah, I just
knew he didn't know, because you wouldn't do that if you knew.
No, right? No. I mean, I was at the pool, you know, trying to get the pool.
No
thing.
Hard feelings. I just think it's funny at where you're at in your life and the age you are. And I remember the other thing you said, too, is you're like, man, I had this weird feeling like it was weird. Like, I don't know what it even was. Like, I kind of wanted to cry, but I'm not hurt. Like, I don't, and I'm like, oh, you're getting emotional. Yeah. Like, you got a little emotional.
Dude,
and he's like, I don't know. No, it wasn't that, because I wasn't even hurt.
What? It was probably when I was sipping on the dancing. What? Probably was. I stopped drinking when I turned 21. So
it's probably a good thing. You probably shouldn't have done it earlier. But.
Yeah, with Pete Fox, you know which one. Pete Fox, man, probably get him arrested by telling this. It's been 10 years, right?
Is that the rule, 10 years?
I think so.
Yeah, we took me on vacation down in Bahamas, and I thought I was tough, and there were some yellow lemon drops.
Oh, yeah.
Lemon drops.
Shots, yeah.
And, bruh, I have like 4 lemon drops. And I was just doing it. He's like, nah, slow down. I'm like, man, whatever. James Stewart, you know? Yeah. And dude, he literally carried me up to my room. I was in the room 2 days. 2 days. It was bad. Yeah, that's really bad. I was like,
I've been bad. I don't think I've ever been 2 days bad.
Now it's bad. Yeah. We got to ask Pete about that. And he was laughing. And I was like, I mean, it was bad. But 2 days in a room, ruined the vacation on there because I was like, thought I was, you know, man, wasn't even 18, whatever. Yeah, and down there you can drink at 18.
So well, that's what I was saying. Yeah. Credit, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. So maybe lucky. I was close. But yeah, we were down there. That was bad time. So I truly when I stopped. Well, after I went down Newport Beach.
Oh yeah, I heard you rode down through the sand, right? Almost hit like one of those poles or something for
yeah.
the
volleyball yeah. net.
Did yeah. I tell you that?
With Ronnie, right?
No, with
Ronnie
Alex.
Nelson and Alex.
But it was Ronnie Nelson's house.
Yeah.
Was it Ronnie Nelson's house? Yeah. I don't even know whose house we were at.
Yeah, it was Ronnie's. There.
I just remember that one girl that she was saying the mind is a powerful thing. And she was like, the mind tells you about pain. And so she was like, I could put my hand over this fire, my arm over this fire. We had a bomb and it won't hurt me because my mind's telling me. So she did it on there and she was like, I was like, damn, all right. 10 minutes later, she's in the room like, like burnt her hand up on that. like yeah.
The chicken sandwich.
Yeah.
We'll
get to that.
It's on my list.
We'll get to the chicken sandwich.
So yeah, it was, it was fun, but I'm sorry, man. I mean.
No, you don't have to be sorry. I just thought that it was a funny story.
Yeah, no, I did not know that. You live and learn, and I didn't pay that bill.
Yeah, all good. We got you.
It was about as bad as Buddy's, Anthony's. Pants. He had capris on.
Yeah, we kept his kid was actually young then because now Boston's way bigger than him, so it wouldn't be funny. Really? But at the time, we're like, "Oh, you're wearing Boston's pants."
Yeah, and you guys, you know, Buddy Anthony has what 3-time arena cross champion. Good
six
guy.
Time.
Yeah, 6-time maybe. Yeah, dominant. And I passed him one in 2002 to get second place over in. Or actually, he might have been the one that won that moto, but nonetheless.
Where
in 2002, the only race I lost. Only moto I lost besides the one I did at Spring Creek at Reed in 2002, like after my bike blew up. Like, remember I crashed in the first corner at Redbud, came back, and I remember how big that was. I know we're jumping off subject, but I remember getting second place, how big that was for me and confidence-wise because it was the first time I was able to come through the back of the pack without crashing and salvage a position. So getting second place, it showed the team, showed me that, like, okay, he's in it for the championship. Because in Supercross, I get a bad start. You can guarantee you put at least 2 crashes in there. It was going to happen. And in other races that I won that year previously, it was like a whole shot to be up there and just dip out on him. So that was the first race I came from, like, last to second. And then I won up the next year at Butts Creek.
Yeah, that's on last. List.
Yeah. So yeah, and Buddy Anthony, I passed him. I think I passed him for second, and Danny Smith or somebody else won on the Suzuki. Hmm. So
good memory you got. I don't have that one. Yeah. And then I had Daytona. These are all random, not even in order, but Daytona, when you won at Daytona, when things were going really terrible on our team, like the timing of it, this is JGR.
Davey was
the timing of it was cool. And it was muddy, like not great conditions. We tried every tire Pirelli had that day.
Yeah,
and then both of you guys were out front. I think Davey was actually leading.
Yeah,
you had to beat him.
Yeah, I had to beat him. I was so mad. I'm like, dude, you're the second guy. Let me win. Yeah. Like, we need it.
So you went 1-2. But earlier in that day, what was cool is you wanted to put 259 on your bike, and we couldn't do it. We could only do it in a free practice.
Yeah, I remember that.
So we put it on just for the free practice. Just
why
for
did we do it that
15
week?
Minutes?
I don't remember what.
That's because
it was
that's
like
how
trying to get us back to the roots.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Yeah. Things were so bad, and we were struggling that we were just like maybe 259 to work.
Tried that every week.
Yeah,
maybe we should do that every week.
It worked. It worked for that weekend. But yeah, it was a blue 259. But yeah, we did that. It was free practice, and that was really cool.
That was cool to do.
Yeah,
that whole bike, like we had so many cool parts on it. I remember Ty Gibbs was there. He's in the photo. He's a little tiny kid back then. Now he's a racer in NASCAR. Yeah. So it's pretty cool. Yeah. Like just the timing of it.
Yeah, there was like 3 races because we actually started rodding pretty good. Like even in the second race in Phoenix. Like I rode pretty good. I was sick.
Yeah, I remember kept launching this one wall jump out like super fast. Like you got a bad start or something, but you're riding great.
Yeah, I ran in the back of like short. on there, right before the mechanics there. But I was riding pretty good on there, and I actually rode really well in the heat race. That's where that 2-for-1 special came up there. And then the next race was Anaheim 2. Yeah, I think it was Anaheim 2, one of them. And I'm trying to think what happened that race. Maybe it wasn't Anaheim 2. I think there was only 2 Anaheims that year. But nonetheless.
You did win Oakland.
I won Oakland. Cool. And that was cool because like we just lost Tex that time. Yeah. I was speaking about him the other day.
I remember how mad you were when you called me that he didn't show up.
Yeah.
Like, that's not like him. Like,
yeah, I felt so
honestly,
bad.
Honestly, he didn't even work on our team. Like we had to let him go. And we still stayed friends. Like, he was actually awesome, good dude, worked hard. That's a guy in your corner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, nah, he gets in like probably too much. You're like, dude, you get back it down. You gotta be like that. But
yeah,
he was a good dude. And
yeah, yeah,
he was helping some girl put gas in her car or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that what he was doing?
Yeah.
On the side of the freeway down here in Florida.
Yeah. Up like towards Volusia County, like Daytona area. Like, he stops. And that's what kind of person he was. Like, he was, you know, he cared. And he was like, when I remember when he first came, he was a little awkward, you know, just, you know, not just personality.
Where did he come? You guys brought him, right?
He had a big head. That's what we used to mess with him. Like, he had a big old head. And, but then like I he was my practice mechanic. And then like, we just started connecting. Like, I'm like, he's a good dude. And like, we were out here like doing our stuff. And then, one day, like, it was like, we rode at night. And then the next day, like, or soon after there, like, he didn't show up. And then, so I'm like, I'm here waiting to ride. I'm calling him, nothing. And then, I think his mom called, or somebody, I think she actually called the house and told, or sister, or somebody, and somebody called. And then he was
did
like,
he come, was it through Gibbs or
did
Gibbs?
He wanted somebody. He wanted somebody new. I don't know what
a little younger.
And so I'm like, oh, I got the perfect guy. Like, cause he's a tough personality to work on a team, but a really good guy in your corner. So that's why I thought he would be good for you, because he'll be here just for you. And that's what he was good at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Working with other people. We used to call him, textgestions, because it had to be his way.
Yeah.
Always he's pretty stubborn and everything you do, he had like, why don't you do it this way?
Yeah.
Always.
That's what it was. And, you know, but
it gets
again,
annoying, you know, but I'm like, so then everyone hated him on the team.
Yeah.
But they liked him at the same time. So it's this weird thing. And then we're like, man, this just isn't working. We're all fighting. And this guy, everything we do, he has a different way we should do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway,
yeah,
he was an awesome person, and I'm glad that you got to meet him and he did a good job.
And yeah, I know you did a good job. And, you know, it was just crazy how we found out. Like, he was up there, seen his girlfriend or whatever. And this lady was on the side of the road, like, she had a flat tire. So being Tex, who he is, you know, pulled over to help her in the middle of the night, and he gets hit by a car.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was it. And then it was just like, so that, you know, we all got close to him, you know, the whole team. So we went into, Oakland that night, and I don't know, man. It wasn't like we were like trending like the right way. We just something about that night. Like, I swear it had to be him, because it was just perfect. We weren't even fast in practice and heat race. Villo ran me down and was still struggling. But that main event, it was like probably one of the easiest races I won. I remember just riding and went past Chad, who was riding good that year, and, you know, dropped Villo. And yeah, it was his first win as a team. So it was cool after that. And yeah.
That was Pirelli's first win too. They
were
pretty excited because that was a new tire they brought.
Yeah. Well, second win as a team for those guys, but first win for us that year. And then reality hit the next weekend. Yeah. I actually rode pretty good. That's when I clipped that little on-off thing and heat race, and went down at Anaheim 2 or Anaheim 3. Laid out. But then I came back and I got second the main event, struggling. Yeah. I mean, I was hurting that. Yeah, right here. A wheel tap thing gets a little light. Yeah. Hand goes off, laid up. Oh, take me, Jesus. Yeah. See, and those are the things right there that, like,
that's weird.
It killed me, because, like, normally, like, I couldn't tell where the bike was. Like, I can't feel the rear end or feel the way the suspension was. And, that thing slipped, but my hand falls off right here.
Yeah.
And then I end up breaking a rib or something and laying. Yeah.
The hard part is when you do it, you do it well.
Yeah.
And whatever it is, winning, crashing, whatever, you go all out.
Yeah. And And the thing was, I mean, I came back and I passed Reed doing that same thing in the main event, you know, and, you know, again, it's like with that, it was so hard because I'm like, I can't tell what I'm doing wrong, but like, it's not like I don't feel like I'm doing something wrong, you know? So I kept continuing like doing it. It's, you know, normally if you like, you crash in the whoops or you do something, you're like, oh, I don't hit that line. Yeah. But if I would have like bled into that and believe like, well, I don't know what this bike's going to do, I would have just never raced, period. Cause I didn't know when it was going to happen. So I kept continuing like being who I was and just like, I'll figure it out until I was sitting on that hay bale. And so then I was like, all right, I'm done with this.
And then the next thing I had on my list was just like how you used to do those dances after the races were over. I thought it was cool. Like some 50 kid just started doing it this year. I think the sprinkler, like what you did back in the day, like, you know, I wish I would encourage you to do it more. Cause I thought it was cool. I think people gave you a hard time that you were kind of being too arrogant or something, but
were people not into it?
I think the fans were mad, right?
No, it was the industry. The fans loved it on there. They were having signs and stuff, but you had like the certain fans that, you know, like thinking about it now, this, they had issues with me, period, you know? But like I was doing it, you know, I did the first time I did it was at Houston in 2004. And I think the fans, they didn't have a problem with me doing the sprinkler, or the people didn't have a problem with me doing it and dancing. It was the fact that they wanted me to move up that year, and I stayed and rode the East Coast again. So they thought, you know, I had sandbagger, you know, big old signs up in the stands, sandbagger. And, you know, so they were more upset that I didn't go race with Ricky then. So doing the sprinkler was like, you know, rubbing it in their face.
Yeah.
But they didn't realize I was like, you know, just 17 years old, just turned 18.
That's crazy to think back.
Yeah. So that's what it was. So the people didn't have it. I think it was more that. And then, but yeah.
I liked it. Thought it was cool.
Oh, so did I.
But so did more of it.
Yeah. I stopped doing it because like, I didn't feel like it'd be one thing. Like some people have problems, but like I didn't sense that. Like even Cowie, I don't think they were like.
Well, how was Felds?
Oh, they loved it. They loved it.
Yeah, I would think. I don't know anyone that didn't like it.
Yeah,
Kawasaki was fine.
I think it was more they didn't.
I think they might have maybe thought it was going to turn the fans against you.
Yeah, that's what it was. They weren't encouraging it. Nobody didn't like it. It was just the fact that like, well, maybe.
I think you were like the first guy to do it. Which is pretty cool. Like who else thought to do something like that?
Well, it's like the opening ceremonies. Like when you turn in those videos, like I was the first person to do that. So, I mean, part of our job is entertainment. Yeah. So I just started, I enjoyed, I was going to win the race cause I had my skit done. Like I wanted to get the skit in there.
Oh, this isn't on here. Do you remember Endoing on the parade lap?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah. 2007. That was a tough night. We crashed in the main event.
Really wrecked. I had to change a lever on the line and a front number plate.
It's like,
yeah, like broken off. It's like your biggest fear just happened. You have no time.
Yeah. And when I mean I wrecked, I crashed. Yeah.
Where were you?
San Diego. Yeah. San Diego, 2007. And I know why I haven't, you know, like they, back then they probably still do it, but on the Bobcats, they'll get up there and they'll sit the Bobcat and smooth it down. Well, when you do that, it puts like a little indention on like, you know, wherever you set it down at. So when I was doing the nose wheelie, I did it in practice a couple of times. They did it. They cleaned the track up between the practice and the heat races. So when I went up to go do it, I was the first person on the track. And it's nighttime. So I get up there and I see it. And I'm nose wheelie and I see this little thing. And it's like the tire. I hit it and it just stopped me. And I'm picking it right up in there. And I flip over because it was on top of the tabletop. And I endo. Like I hit so hard on that ground. And so I try to get up and like woo. And they turn the lights off on me. Yeah. So that's the, and then they show it on TV. But it was because they did the little Bobcat thing and that was embarrassed. And then I came back and I ended up crashing again. I ran in that hay bale that night and jumped off the finish line.
Crazy.
I got sixth.
I like that you know I got sixth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then Motocross of Nations I had on my list. Like we always had fun.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Going over there, that was always cool. Like, remember, those people we went, they like loved him like more than anyone I've ever seen. I think because you didn't go over there much.
Yeah.
You don't do all the European races like these other guys.
Booba.
Yeah. So when Booba. You came, they were loving it.
Remember my tooth was hurting that year?
Yeah.
The first year. And I had Bodner shoot me. I had broke my wisdom tooth, needed to come out. And so I think I cracked it or whatever, DK, whatnots.
Was that at the
first year of Motocross of Nations?
And yeah, there's so much pressure on everyone for there. And they had all these meetings they wanted James at, and don't blow it. And he comes in with a toothache. I think we wrecked in the first moto. And then you ended up doing good, but you did fall.
Yeah.
Just slid out. Nothing bad.
No, I just fell over. Yeah. And then Ricky got hurt. So they put Ivan in, and he was hurt. So he came back just to, you know, race there. And it's funny how, like, politics, because they wanted Suzuki and DeCoster, so they wanted him. And you probably could think of, you know, a couple other people that's been racing that probably been bad. And I even held his own in the first moto, but I remember, like, the second moto, like, he comes up and he's tired, like, because he hadn't been racing.
He's like, you got to.
And then so, like, I'm the captain of the team, and Ricky's there. So, I mean, I crashed a few times that year. So they're like, just don't blow it. So a little tip over, it was bad. And then, but it started back in, remember Steel City? There was a Motocross of Nations dinner.
Yeah, dinner, yep.
And I remember, like, that thing.
Scott Taylor made that whole video.
Yeah. Oh, he made a video of it?
Well, no, he did the whole thing. He's the one that kind of, like, put it together to have this whole dinner and make a big deal about it.
Well, yeah. But I remember crashing. I remember crashing during the week at practice. I hurt my shoulder. And I went up to Fisher. You remember this, probably. And I told Fisher, like, hey, like, I'll still go, but my shoulder's, like, messed up. Like, otherwise, I'm just show up at the race. And he's like, don't worry about going to the dinner. And I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I'll let him know. Well, he told those guys, he was like, I don't know where he's at on there.
Yeah, everybody was mad. They thought he dodged the whole thing. They're thought he did this whole thing for him, but he's not even here.
Yeah. And then so
I bet Taylor was heated too.
Yeah. I mean, but it was all, and unfortunately, like, that's kind of how my relationship was. I mean, he felt that's why he ended up leaving. Well, probably one of the reasons. But that's how it was with Fisher. It sucked. Like, it was just, you know, things like that. But yeah, it was big old dinner. And he was like, I don't know where he's at. I'm there. And I, of course, I take the heat. And then I remember being pissed that weekend. Pissed. I remember, like, being in the motorhome, wouldn't even go out. Like, I signed autographs, went back to the motorhome. Like, I came out, just got on a motorcycle, and I went back to the bus. Like, I didn't want nothing to do with the team. I was so bummed. And I look at it now, I'm like, the only person that was hurt was, like, you. Because I'm like, I was so mad at the betrayal and then just the whole fact that, like he knew it. But
he probably don't even remember. Fisher doesn't remember any of this. He probably doesn't.
Yeah.
I don't think he knows anything that he did. I mean,
I always
like
used to
mess
with.
You didn't pay your bill. Like, we don't know.
No, it's more power to him. Like, it's taught me lessons. Like, he's one of many. I just remember him flying off that damn burn back when he was, like,
right. Yeah, that's right.
I used to always tell him, like, you can't tell me. Like, talk to me when you land off the track right. Like, there was a highlight video back in the day. He goes flying off this berm. And I used to always, like, you can't tell me how to jump. Look at what you did. Yeah, I always mess with him, but,
But we did win that year, Motocross of Nations. And back then, it was an honor to be picked. You know, like, it was cool to go.
Yeah, but, you know, like, remember how much heat we got? like, because Kawasaki didn't want me to go. Like, when we're on the...
They hated going because it was so expensive.
The 125s and stuff. So people thought like it was me, and I'm sure...
Well, they didn't want you to go. Honestly, Kawasaki's thought was the 125, you're kind of like the guinea pig out there. So you're out there just getting hammered. You get last gate pick. You don't get a good start. You're just out there getting roosted for America, really, is the way they took it. So I get, they've never liked that race. So it's not you.
No, it wasn't even that. But like, I took the heat because it was like, I didn't want to go like on there. And again, like maybe I wasn't like jumping up and down, but it wasn't like
you weren't
I got asked. Yeah. And I'm like, no, it wasn't going to go.
Well, what they typically do is ask the team, will you support it? And when they say no, then you don't even ask anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're definitely anti.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And they knew, I mean, knowing my history, like I was going to win anyway. So you put me in a bad pick. It's just taking chances, you know, unnecessary chances that I was going. And I was young. I was their golden boy. I was the next one to come up because Ricky went to Honda. So the last thing you want to do is put me in a situation. So it wasn't even an option to go until that year, 2006, I got picked. But even then, it kind of sucked, like on there. I remember winning. We won and I was so mad. Because like it was like we won as a team, but I lost on there. Like it was weird.
Well, that's what you weren't used to. Like you didn't win the race, but we won.
Yeah,
and it's weird. You're this weird team.
Oh, that you're saying that
you're normally not you're normally not all working together either, and that's kind of different, which is what I liked later on. But you're like usually you're all enemies. You're all here working together. You're not trying to win the race. You're just trying to get the best score.
Yeah.
And that's what you're not used to, right?
Well,
you just want to win.
It wasn't that. Like, I actually didn't have a problem, like, doing it for the team. It was more like, I'm like, why? Because, like, then I get up there, and that's when Everts, it was the last race. You know, he was talking about pride. Like, he was like, I'll never roll over. Like, if he could have beat me, like, I was like, look, dude was going fast. But, like, you know, at the end of the day, I'm trying to just win this thing for the team.
Yeah.
And then
like, that's what they talked to him about the whole time. Don't do it for you. Do it for the team.
Yeah. It's like, so don't blow it like on there. And then when Tedesco tells me that, I'm like, all right, cool. So I go out there and ride like nervous.
Yeah.
And we win. I'm like, And then I just get beat up like on the thing. So the next year I was like, hell, you know, all right. I get my chance again. I'm going out and I won. And then I end up crashing in one moto. But yeah, it was, that's what it was more about, not the team. Yeah, because Ricky was whooping my ass all year. I was kind of getting used to getting second place a few times. But so it wasn't that. It wasn't that.
What's my next thing here? So Canada, I remember the guys. So when we first did that, I think it was 2006. You have the pictures up here. The World Supercross thing is when they first did that. And I remember Big B, the truck driver, did not want to go to Canada. So he was so against us going to race it because it was in preseason.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meetings, they're like, they're all yelling at me that you weren't ready. You're not prepared. Kind of like what you're saying Rick did early on. This is later in your career. They're like, he's not even ready. He shouldn't even be going to this race. We need to wait to Anaheim. And I'm like, well, we're racing it. And if he wins, you can't, none of you come hug him. Like there's, don't come up there and act like you're all part of it if you're against it in this meeting right now. So then when you won, I said, don't hug him. I told you, don't hug him when he wins.
How do we remember that? That's probably why it starts separating team right there. Oh, yeah. And I probably looked at it like, all right, well, I guess
why are these guys not coming over here to hug me?
Because
I told him you better not come hug me.
That's funny.
Talking
that was my
trash
guy
in the meeting.
Yeah, and like the one thing you would let me know, like on stuff like that, not like telling or trying to like create problems, but he
just
was always honest.
Up.
Like, hey, look, you know, like just know the fact like they were against you going up there. You know, we're gonna go. So, you know, that was kind of how he is. And I appreciated that. And but it's funny that I wasn't ready because we just won.
They just didn't want to go.
Yeah, they didn't want to go. So we
that
just
was the way to get out of going to Canada. No one liked that either. That was like the thing thrown on everybody to go to this race. No one liked it. It was a pain.
Yeah.
But then the number seven, like when it was fun to be part of that because we had to like come up with like the seven number was not a cool looking number. So it had the Factory Effects, Fox, everybody working on making number seven. So it's kind of fun. We looked at a whole bunch of sevens and had New Beginning on the back of the pants.
Yeah. Remember, I almost went three. I almost went with number three because I think I outpointed Brownie or whatever and I could have chose number three. But we ended up going seven.
I think we did seven because there wasn't really any iconic seven guy. Like I remember Larry Ward was seven, but like no one, LaRocco here and there, but no one that really was like made that number cool.
Well, and it's funny you say that because those are one of the reasons I picked it was because of those guys. Like I used to love Mike LaRocco and then Matasevich was number seven. So yeah,
I don't remember Chicken being seven, really. He probably was.
He was seven. Yeah.
That was the gear. You always wanted to look like him, I think, when you were younger. I always remember the Fox gear you had on.
Him and Bradshaw. He was number seven.
Yeah.
I think so. Look it up, Cole. Jeff Matasevich, number seven.
I remember when Chicken was 20.
I remember when he was nine.
Those guys, they change their numbers every year.
They had to. Like,
yeah, that was the old rule.
It's change your number when you got. And I think Ricky was like the one guy that kind of stopped that.
Well, Bruce, that was Bruce's idea to be able to have like a brand. There it is. Chicken.
Yeah. I know my stuff.
That's a high flyer. You must have had a high flyers card.
I did have high flyers. Yeah. I used to have them. Some of them I had in like little plastic things.
Those were ahead of their time. They would do good now. You didn't make a 7-1.
Yeah.
Roger.
I think I probably still have them too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, he was that. And then, because I used to be always Kawasaki fan. So yeah.
Yeah, then the Hangtown stress, that was more of me talking earlier, just the battling with Roncada. We kind of already talked about it. Like, that was...
I had trigger finger.
That was tough. Night.
That was tough. Like, I'm telling you, I was a lap from giving up. Like, I was like, dude, he can have it.
You know what? You asked me earlier what the toughest times were. I think Hangtown every year was always the hardest. Because every year we come in and you aren't feeling as good as you should be. And that track is always high speed, small chatter.
Yeah.
Like totally different. So
different than everything else.
Yeah. Well, like the bikes aren't set up for there. So we would always struggle there. And I remember we took the bike all apart, changed all kinds of stuff to try to make you comfortable. And it kind of worked, but I don't think you ever were great there on the bike, like the way you felt.
Yeah. Well, I think there was only 2 years that we really raced it like correct. And that was Hangtown. We would have been worried in 2004, 2005, we were worried because we were on the two-stroke again.
Yep.
And then 2006, we just had the four-stroke, so we were kind of excited to get back in. We ended up winning. We went 3-1 that day or 2-1 or something in 2006. But, yeah, in 2002, I don't think we were worried because, like, I mean, it was, like, first time there. And that track was actually good that year. And then 2000, we were hurt in 2003, so... We really raced it 3 years. Yeah. We won two of them, two out of three.
But it was always stress on me because every time we're like trying to figure the bike out, suspension apart.
Yeah.
And you have no really like settings that worked yet. Normally you have settings already that you know worked at a different track. Like you have nothing.
You
just got to figure it out.
Yeah. And thinking about it, like we had 3 years in a row, the last 3 years in a row. We came in and everybody was running four strokes and we just had a little bit of taste of the four strokes at Vegas that year in 2004. So we're like, all right, here we go. So we had a battle with Roncada and then 2005, we're two stroke again going against that. So I can understand why, like, all right, here we go again. Like, you know, being nervous. And in 2006, it was the first time we rode a 450 outdoors. So for him as a mechanic, I can understand why he's like, dude, I don't know. Like, coming in because we always had something, a challenge or, you know, we were kind of at a disadvantage. So
who was suspension guy back? Was it Graham?
Graham was the first year.
Yeah, Graham. Then it was probably Kaipo, right?
Yeah, Kaipo was, 2007. We had Sergio for a little bit.
Yeah.
What's the guy? He's in the photo. Remember the photo at Butts Creek? I was trying to figure out.
Leaf.
Brett Leaf. That's the guy.
When you're scrubbing, that famous scrub. He's right in the picture.
He's the guy right there. Brett Leaf, and he was funny because he used to always be late for the airport or something.
He drove from Elsinore. Like he was always, and he's so mellow. Hilarious.
What did he do?
He did forks.
Yeah.
So Rick Ash did shocks and motors.
I didn't know Rick did shocks.
Yeah. So Rick was a shot guy and a motor guy. And then Brett. There's Brett right there.
That's Eddie Casillas in the asterisk. Yep. And then Brett. That's the guy I was trying to
Brett's
think of.
Brett's probably like, dang it. I should have stayed on that team.
That was the first year he left, too.
Yeah.
I don't remember
him. Yeah, that was cool to watch you do that.
That was a good day.
Now everyone tries to scrub. It's like a normal thing now.
Yeah. It's like you don't race. You can't even race without scrubbing. It's natural. Yeah. I don't even think you call it out anymore.
Yes. Like,
it's just part of the game.
You could say you changed the game.
Yeah. There. Yeah.
And then here's the burnt by Wendy's chicken sandwich.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I teach my kids this one. You got to pay attention to what you put in the microwave.
I just like hearing this story from you because I've heard it a couple different times and yeah. I didn't believe it.
I'm getting hot thinking about it.
Yeah, yeah, it doesn't. It's not a normal thing. You don't hear of it much. But and back then, we didn't, you know, whenever James was injured, didn't say anything. Like, they didn't want anyone to know because kind of give the competition a little bit of an edge there. So
yeah,
didn't really know. So
no one would believe
we didn't even know. Well, this story for sure. This is a different one. But yeah, he was here. You were all alone. Your parents and your brother were at an amateur race.
Yeah.
He was riding little pit bikes because my brother actually always gave you 110s. He'd always hook you up.
Joel.
Yep. So he would always have him some cool bikes. And that's what I thought was really cool with you. You would ride motorcycles, your 125, 250, whatever, all day, be done, come ride your pit bike.
Yeah.
Get bored, put your gear back on, go ride, and then come back and you're like sitting around and you get bored and you go ride your pit bike again.
Well, it wasn't
you your sweats this time. That was the problem.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't much to do in Residence Inn in Irvine over there. Stand by. Yeah, I used to go race those races. I think it was like Tuesday or Thursday.
You're making gas money.
I was making gas money back there. We'll keep that story for another time. But yeah, they're like, well, how are you taking this money? I'm like, well, I need that one, buddy. But yeah, it was
that was fun, right?
Yeah, that was 110s. It was fun. And that's when I was riding at Biflo and all that. I used to ride, just I love riding. And but yeah, I was here and it was in between the West Coast and East Coast break. You know, so the next race was like Dallas, like 8 weeks off. So my parents are gone. I think they were in Texas because it was around March or April right now. And that's when Texas Nationals were. So they were gone. So I was here around my pit bike. And back then we used to have this, you know, 60 gallon drum fuel. And I would just, you know, I would route my pit bike and then just roll up to the thing and just like pump it like with my hand. Well, I overfilled it. I'm here alone. So I got this, the night before I got this, I love Wendy's spicy chicken sandwiches, right? So I get this chicken sandwich and back then they had the aluminum foil on the outside of the chicken sandwich. So I threw this baby in the microwave, all happy.
This is a true story.
No, it's true. Now I got the scars to tell you. So I throw this chicken sandwich in the microwave and next thing I know, the thing sparks, right? So I'm like, oh no. So I reach in there and I pull the thing out. Well, a little piece. So let me back up a little bit. I had these sweatpants on and, you know, so when I spilled gas cause it overflowed. So I put the chicken sandwich in there. Thing sparks. I pull it out with my hand, little piece. I saw it floating down. It was like in slow mo and it hit my pants. My whole leg caught on fire. That stop, drop and roll shit don't work. I tell you that much. Dude, I'm like rolling around, like freaking out. And the pants that I had on, they were like nylon and it just melted to my leg. And so I'm like freaking out. I pull my pants off and like, luckily for me, when I pulled my leg off, the thing stuck to my skin. So I pulled all my skin off. I got third degree burns. Like I'm crying.
Gnarly
I'm
burns.
Yeah. Gnarly. Scars. I'm here by myself freaking out. So I'm like, I got to go to the hospital. Cause I mean, it was bad. I was in so much pain. And so I'm driving to the hospital by myself with third degree burn leg. And there, I ain't got no gas in my car. So I got to pull over. I'm at the gas station crying like, and I'm pumping gas on there with third degree burns on my leg. So I go to the hospital and they were like, oh my God. So they put me like I was in an emergency, like, you know, emergency thing. What do you call them? Like the next level up. Well, I was in that.
ICU.
Yeah, ICU. And I was in the hospital and didn't ride. I was in the hospital for a few days still by myself. And yeah, this was in between, like I said, the break. And I didn't ride at all until I showed up at Dallas.
Yeah, because we didn't even know if you're going
to
be able to put your boot
on. And I think like, I told him
to try.
And I couldn't put my boot on. I remember trying to put my boot on one time after wrapping this thing up. And it was like, you know, 6 weeks or something. And I just remember getting to Dallas and I stuffed my foot in the boot in pain. Oof. And then went out there and won the title that night and not round for 6 weeks. And then that was in 2003. But yeah, goddamn chicken sandwich. They spicy, baby. They spicy. So kids,
I don't think anyone knows that story.
No, it's the first time I ever told it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I'm getting hot thinking about it. Yeah. I got a third degree burn. Like part of my leg's white. That's why on this side, I can't dance right. Like the other side, I'm smooth, but this side, I can't get it right. So it was, this chicken sandwich. And yeah, imagine telling, hey, Bruce.
Yeah, I can't make it this
week. I can't raise damn chicken sandwich. It's hot.
Yep, it was hot. A little too hot.
Too hot for my own good.
And then
I got in trouble. My dad was pissed. Pissed. He's like, Junior, why you burn yourself? You know better. I'm like, Dad, look, my legs is gone. And I'm like, he was like, you know, it's not right. I'm like, Dad, I'm hurt. I want to be comfort. He was like, stupid. Yeah. You racing. We winning this title, Junior. We ain't doing that. I was like, all right. So,
and you won.
I won. It was one of the best races I had all year, too. I was dominating. It was good.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, that works right in the next one, how tough you were, because I remember you broke your collarbone.
Huh.
And you, at Vegas, remember you flipped right into the mechanics area, the scariest thing I've ever seen. You endoed right in there. And he broke his collarbone.
Yeah.
And then he had it plated and he wanted to race the first national.
Yeah.
And you were doing pushups at Kawasaki to prove to us that you could ride. And they're like, no, we don't want you. Yeah. We don't want you to ride because we're thinking longer term.
Yeah.
Like you're thinking title right now. We're thinking future. And he was so bummed he couldn't ride, but I couldn't believe he could do a pushup. Honestly,
it was
right after surgery.
It was 7 days. I remember it was Sunday or Monday. Cause I had surgery on a Tuesday and they plated this thing and I was doing pushups by the end of the week. And
people that break their collarbone, think of that.
Scar proof. It's right here.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's on the side. Got another scar on that one. Yeah. And I still got that plate in there. And
if they would have let you ride, you would have won the title.
If they would have let
Ryan Hughes ended up winning because they canceled,
Langston. Langston won.
That's right. Cause they canceled,
the Troy twice.
The one that rained out.
Yeah.
Troy.
Ohio. Yeah. Rhino was 5 points behind Langston and that's him and Brown, they were leaking oil big time. It was an oil spill. BP oil spill up in
that
thing.
Won every race. You came back.
Yeah.
Everyone. No problem.
Yeah. Between, I missed those four races in the beginning part of the year, but between, 2002 and when I lost in 2004, it was 28 or 32 motos in a row I won on there. Longest streak, but Scott Taylor, he wouldn't land that because he was like, oh, he missed him four races on there. But if you go back to the end of 2002 at Millville, I won every moto from Millville 2002 until second moto Red Bud in 2004, every moto on there.
And that's hard to do. You look at it now, people are happy if they win one weekend.
Yeah. We only lost three overalls in my whole 125 career. We only lost three overalls. I think we lost maybe a total of 9 motos out of all of them.
That's crazy.
We won so much, you expect it. You don't even, it's weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
You let go there knowing we're winning today.
Yeah. No, it wasn't even a thought to lose. It's and that's when we started. I remember you putting me, you called me a retard or something because I was I want to win this race by a minute.
Can't use that word anymore, but we did. Yeah.
You won by a minute.
You did win by a minute.
Yeah, but it's just setting another goal.
Well, yeah.
I mean, by a minute? I mean, why do you got to just 30 seconds? He did that all the time. That was plenty good.
But, yeah, it was fun.
Like everyone will tell you, if you win the race, it doesn't matter by how far.
True.
But yeah. What if you were 59 seconds ahead and you wadded up because you're trying to win by a minute? Like what?
Well, I always
that was him though.
I always thought like the opposite. I thought if I didn't have a goal because I knew I was going to win, that I would get hurt like on there. So I always kept setting like reasons to do stuff. That's probably why I kept taking out lappers. I had to keep my mind like preoccupied because winning wasn't even a thought. Like,
oh, yeah, that's the crash right there. That was terrible.
J-Bone, I ain't going to lie to you. Like, I still think that to this day something happened at bike. I think so. And like,
it looks weird.
It's just the fact that, you know how like that year, like I was so dialed in on that motorcycle and I made the mistake a half lap earlier getting on that tabletop, but I went in that corner too far inside, slid out. But to like do that, like I still can't understand how that happened. Like yeah, I was
we dynoed everything after that because we were trying to figure it out.
Yeah, like
I took the whole bike and put everything on the dyno.
Yeah, it just goes and like
the bike was fine.
Yeah.
I would have thought the same thing.
But back then, I mean, jetting was such a big deal. Like it could have been a bog right there that was enough to do that, to get him to throw his weight off.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I mean, I can't really remember.
You don't remember. We couldn't ask you.
But I mean, remember this quad thing
that
I was
quad
jumping?
That was awesome. Yeah.
That was gnarly.
And yeah, you'd like wheelie up to it, set it down. Well, and the crazy part is when we do the track walk, he would say, hey, do you think I could do this? And then if I said yes, then I knew he was going to try it. So that was always a hard thing for me, what I should say you should do. And then I remember one time, I don't remember what race it was, but I told you to like triple in a race and you won the race. But like, I knew if I put something on there, you were going to do it. And that's actually like scary because if he does it and crashes, you're on, like it's on you.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that was like a scary thing because if I say you could do it, you were going to do it.
Yeah. I mean,
I remember us looking at that quad. It was gnarly.
Yeah, it was gnarly. And the only way, I remember the guy said that's a 125 jump or something. they were just scared to hit it. But I mean, you had to wheelie into it. But that thing right there when I slid out, I mean, that was on me. On there, it was just too far inside. But I was just so dialed in on that bike, man, that I don't know how that happened. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yeah.
We didn't figure that one out.
Yeah. And I remember going to Vegas. We always struggle jetting in Vegas on there, because being up at altitude was so dry.
Yeah.
That, like I don't know, maybe it was because it does look like a bog like on there.
Yeah, like I'm only thinking that now when I watch it, only because you like see like a little hesitation there right before you take off. But you had a big bog here on a 250 two-stroke. It's like a video pulls up all the time on YouTube back then.
It's always gets in the recommendations on YouTube. I always get it. But I was laid out.
That used to happen. That was stressful for me. Like back then, you're always messing with jetting and trying to get it right. And it was hard.
Yeah. Especially in 2004 when we went to Unleaded. Mm-hmm. The bikes are already slow, so you're trying to create this power without having the thing detonate,
I'd be on the phone with Scott trying to jet it back here in Florida when I'm out there. It was always something.
Yeah, I was laid out.
Every day I got phone calls. Like you were never off.
Yeah. Well, I was off right here. Yeah, I was off. Yeah.
Yeah, that was not good. That was right in front of me. That was like not.
Yeah,
that was the worst one for me.
Yeah,
being that close.
You know, that's partly why I'm afraid of triples. That one out there, even though I crashed on the double part.
You were afraid of them way before that.
I know, but that one put me over the top.
I get why you are now.
Yeah, and I crashed on the double. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So then, what else? Scrubbing, like just obviously we already saw that, but like you used to like pass people like underneath them. You remember you got landed on at one of the Anaheims. Cause you like scrub so fast underneath them, they didn't know you were there.
Oh, Pingree.
Yeah.
Pingree did it. Yeah. It was like a practice.
Yeah. You like shot like under him, like everyone's jumping like this and he shot like this and like went under him. It was crazy.
Yeah.
Never seen anything like it.
Yeah. That was a year before they even talked about the scrub. Or maybe it was, it was actually Phoenix. It was Phoenix. Cause I remember like scrubbing under Pingree and,
it was Phoenix.
Yeah. It was Phoenix.
So that was always, cool stuff that he was the guy that did that first. I thought was cool. And then your whoop speed we talked about, I wrote that here because it's still unbelievable to me. it seemed like Reed would complain about how big they were every time because you'd be the only one. There was one, I think Dallas, you were the only one hitting them.
That's the one you ran in the boat.
They were humongous.
Yeah.
The biggest ones I've ever seen, and they cut them down.
Yeah, there was that race, and there was an you're talking about.
You would have won by a minute, easy, if those ones.
Yeah, you're talking about the one that was in my foot story in 2003 practice. They were huge there. And they were big in 2006 too, where Ricky hit the boat, but they just got like cuffed out. In 2003, they were the biggest whoops I've ever seen. And like no one, I think Reed might've went through them a few times.
No one skimmed them, but you.
No, in the 250 class, like nobody in the 125 didn't even think about doing it. But in the 250 class, they weren't even going through them. And this is when we had Friday practice.
Yep.
And then so they end up cutting those things down for Saturday, but they were huge. And I came out the corner just clicking up like, yeah.
Yeah. And I helped the AMA a little bit this year. So I heard a lot of riders complain about whoops.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I was like, man.
Yeah.
What the heck?
Yeah. They're lucky to have you on that. Like when he told me you're with AMA, I was like, that's cool. That's cool. Because like, it's different having like, you're still in the sport, like you've always been cool. Like you get along with people and like, you know what you're talking about. And to think again, just, you know, from riding, you know, like you kind of see things and you've been around.
Yeah, you see from every side.
Yeah. Like, you know, been working for top guys and then, you know, running teams. So you've seen it from every side. So they're lucky to have you on that. And then when he told me that, I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, at first I didn't know if I liked it, but the more I got into it and you kind of like try to really, like if you want to study that video and we try to figure out like what really made you crash, like that's what we do. We study. So it makes it fun. You're trying to figure, it's like an investigation. Then then it got fun. But at first I'm like, man, all it is, everyone's complaining to me about the track. I mean, the first race they're pulling over yelling at the whoops, but they were a little too tough for the first race, I thought.
Well,
I mean, you would have skimmed across them no problem, but there was people struggling. I had some guys tell me they need to make them so we can jump them, like but you can't cater it to every person. That's the thing that I don't. And well, that's what they're good at not doing is folding because a couple people say it. Like I started going around and getting more of a majority.
Yeah,
and then we do it from that.
Well, I think now like it's been a while since you had whoops, and I talked about it on the recap. It's been a while since I'm like actually whoops play a part in the race now, and. But they're not dangerous. They're not dangerous, just big. And so you've been years without having that type and years where by the end of the night, you can like jump through them. So it kind of like, you know, eliminates the bike setups and all that stuff. But I never saw one whoop section that was like, damn, like that's tough. It was gnarly. Anaheim 3, I think it was. They were big, but they only get tough when they get worn out. And then, you know, and then the guys, like you got some guys that's trying to jump. I had my boy Roxon, he was like doubling through those things. But yeah, I think, you know, all the tracks seem fair. The only thing I don't like is the sand sections. Like, I don't like that. I think you put one sand section in there, it makes half the track one lined it. Like by putting one like section and it just makes it, it's just like you have these cool designs and you put that in there. It just changes the whole landscape where you can't even utilize the track. So whoops are good.
I'm not a fan of the sand sections either.
No,
the one where Craig and what's the name got into it?
Oh yeah, Freeze.
That was good, but the one at Anaheim
because there was two lines. That's why you.
Yeah,
liked
that's
it.
The thing.
The one at Anaheim, they came together.
They came the together, line. And that's the most of them. Like
so that's the one Anderson went and hit Roxon.
Yeah, but he hit him because it
way too much.
Well, they came together like on there. It wasn't anything. And then they had another one at Anaheim 3. It was the same thing. When you kind of make them into 90s, that's when you have the problem.
Yeah. Do you remember earlier when Tampa had a cool sand section because it was a straightaway? It was like super difficult.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a turn, I think, is why it was cool. Yeah. They were rollers. Mm-hmm. It was this white sand.
Yeah.
But they've only done that one time. But that was pretty cool because it was different.
Yeah. It was cool. And I think when they, like, you make them where they put those moguls in there and then they become two lines, but at least it's better than going into the 90s. I think one of the better sand sections was in like 2000 Atlanta in 2013, where there was like a wall jump and Davey was jumping like three, like Millsaps was jumping farther than anybody else was into it. But when you just get them all the same, and if you want to put them in like a rhythm section or a place where like you have rollers or jumps, it just, you create way more opportunity. When you put them in those 90s, it just shuts down the whole track. And if you look at half the tracks this year, like when you put them in a 90, the whole track ends up becoming like one lined it. So compared to like the incident with Freezy, like you had the options and all that. Cause I thought the Anaheim tracks, a couple of them that you did the sand, were actually could have been really good.
But you say you, I didn't do it.
No, I know, but like just like Steve Whitlock.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know,
you get the blame.
Hey, they come to you. There. Yeah. No, you'd be like, man, I don't like it. Everybody comes to me and complain, but they come to you because like, it's like, you're like, I ain't building this thing.
Well, that's the one thing they did like, they said, is that we were getting feedback, which they normally don't get. So the riders were coming to us more. We were talking to the riders more, like we were trying to bridge that gap of, because for a while there, it wasn't that way. So that's what they want. They want them to come to us if they need something. And if there really is a safety concern, not just to complain.
Right. Yeah.
So they did, it got better. Well, as I did it, it got better. And I kind of did that just to do something to be part of the sport. Cause I've been working at, you know, Coy kept me at JGR. So I'm working on the machine shop side. So
yeah,
I'm learning something totally new. And I wanted to do something that I know how to do well and go to the races. And I think that was more for me. Like I like being home with my wife and kids. So I didn't want to do outdoor. And then I took a couple races off to take my kids racing.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's hard because I'm having fun at home and I want to do that. But at the same time, I needed something for me to not totally like shut it out. Like you're good at, you were good at shutting it out. Like I wasn't good at that part. Like I felt like I needed to go talk to my friends still. Like it was weird.
You know, like you're funny you say that. It wasn't that. Like I think, I mean, as you know, like, just scrutinize is different. When every time you speak, like people take it in like different ways, like, and they can run with it. Like, that's why I shut up. Like, it wasn't me shutting it out. It was just, I knew like whatever I said was like it had to be like thought about. Like, and then it wasn't just, I was worried about fans. It dictated sponsors and like everything. So,
and you probably didn't know what you were really doing. That was probably more
like
the problem, right?
Yeah. And I can't, like, I didn't have the luxury to be like, I don't know. Yeah. Like, then it's like, oh, he's hiding. But yeah, the reason I shut out stuff is just because, like, it's, you know, unless you've been in a situation, people don't understand is like, if you live your life, like, worried about how you look, everything you speak, like, and it gets taken, like, you know, in a negative or whatever way, like, which is great because I'm like, when I speak, people listen. But I just got to know what I'm speaking about. And that's why I like doing a podcast now, because I just speak how I am and I talk. But for the longest, it was like, I can't say anything because it did take, like, I'm going to have to answer it later on. And if I don't know, then I was better off not saying anything. So that's where it was, not being shut out. But back to the AMA, I think you bridged the gap. And when he told me, I thought that was cool. Like, I'm like, I think he'll be good at that.
Yeah.
And, you know, and again, even I could tell, like, me talking about it right now, like, you're listening, but they're lucky to have you on that. That was pretty cool.
I'm telling you. Do you remember when we smashed the cars up
here? Yes, I do. Yeah, I think
your dad was so pissed. Like, I get it now as a, like, I don't know why I didn't realize that. So we were here, right? And we all decided we were bored. I don't know why everybody was here. We were here testing. And we saw some little place down the street selling old crappy cars.
Yeah.
So we went down there with cash and we're like, what do you got for $500? So we all bought a car.
I did.
And I don't even know who came. It must have been you who came up with this idea. But we drove these cars here and ran into each other, played demolition derby in the field over here. And then as they're stopping, Dino Dan's out there fixing them.
Yeah.
So every car that gets broken, he's fixing it. And he gets it back running. Then we run into somebody else. And then when they're broken, he goes and gets a tractor and he starts burying one. Just digs a hole, throws it in there, starts crushing it, and then...
Oh, just smashing it with the bucket.
Oh, yeah. So then it started to get not fun because all the cars are breaking because we didn't think of that part. You can only hit somebody so hard and it's going to
smash
the radiator and everything. So we did it for a while, and then we just left all these cars in the field, one buried.
Oh, your dad was going to freak.
He's pissed. And I don't blame him. I don't even know why I thought that was a good idea. Yeah. I know better than that.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like, you guys come here and buy these cars. You need to get them out of here.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, we never thought of that. How are we getting them out of here?
I mean, we were all about the now. You talking about living in the now. Like,
that was.
We had so much fun. I remember because Sori was here during that. I remember he hit one of the guys driving down 27, like full on, bam, like at the traffic light, and everybody's like looking around. We're like, like, yeah, and we got that thing here. Mine's just called Red Dragon. I think I got some photos of that thing. Red Dragon. It was like, we got like 5-6 cars. It was like $1,500, something.
I remember my wife was like, "You did what? You bought a car just to smash it up,
and then you left it?"
Yeah. What were you thinking? I'm like, "I don't know. I wasn't thinking, I guess."
But yeah.
Big James wasn't happy, and I understand. We were
thinking how funny.
We sold him back to the guy.
I don't know.
We had to go back down there because he wanted us to figure out how to get him out of here. So we had to get him towed out.
Yeah. Well, J Bone, it was good catching up, man. It was good. Long time.
Should have did that before, but it's good. Yeah. Better late than never, right?
Yeah. Well, we had to wait to get it on the podcast, but yeah, I appreciate one, you coming down, and again, like, you know, it's just cool. Like talking about these stories, and what's cool is, you know, I haven't spoken to you like this. I mean, since probably we're working together at Gibbs and
2012, that's crazy. 10 yeah, years ago,
2012.
Doesn't seem like it.
The way we're talking it's like, you know, you got a relationship with somebody, and how special it's like when you just continue the conversation. So yeah, I appreciate it. And, tell all the boys I said, what up there, Dean, and is Patty still up there?
Patty's still up there, but he doesn't work for us.
No, it's such a big,
you area. Actually had a track there for a little bit.
Really?
Yeah.
Everybody's moving the North Carolina to track.
The funnier part, he was doing a riding school with his wife, which his wife is actually really good, way better than him, but they were doing a school. And he's teaching my kids, and I'm like laughing. I laughed at Patrick later. I'm like, why are you the one out here teaching my kids?
That's
like,
pretty funny.
But he was good at it. He did a great job.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see him. But yeah, Patty's a good dude. We had a good crew, actually.
No, we did.
I wish, obviously it all went better, but it is what it is. It's who we are. And
Ben was awesome.
Yeah, Ben.
Yep.
Yeah, we always had some pretty good guys. And
yeah, there was not one person on the team that I could say, like, no, I didn't like. I mean, even having with Davey as a teammate, like, he was cool. But I mean, it was just the way the industry was. Like, you switch teams, like, that's just the way it was. Like, Larry Brooke hated me until, like, and I hated him until I wrote for him.
Yeah.
And we were best friends, you know?
Like that. Like, honestly, I mean, I was surprised. I would have told you I never would have had Chad Reed on our team, and he was on there.
Yeah.
And he was actually fine to work with. When you're on the side of the rider, it is a lot different.
Yeah. I mean, again, a part of it's like, I think that's the way the rider wants it that way too. Like, it's some kind of feeling that you get, like, being committed, because we're all insecure and we're all putting our life on the line. So it's like, you know, you want to have a reason and you do it, but everybody loves to do it. Like, every rider out there, you know, no matter how they finish, they love doing it. Just certain ones do it better than others, I guess. So, yeah. That's right. I think it was good. Again, man, I appreciate you coming down, and I thank you for everything, personally, from my career, and it was good to reminisce some of this stuff. I'm gonna shut this down before I start crying, because I'm like, damn, like this was good. I wish we can keep going, but that was good, J-Bone. I appreciate it, and we'll get you to the airport, Roger.
All right,
get you down there.
Well, thanks for having me down. Yeah, I appreciate you letting me part of your whole making history too, really. Like, you had to let me work on the bike and let me be part of your team. So
it's team effort.
I appreciate it there too. And yeah, happy to be part of it for sure.
Yeah.
It's definitely the best part of my career.
No, I appreciate that. Well, it's team. Couldn't done it without you, vice versa. So, all right, guys, that was episode number 7. With, again, best guest, Jeremy Albrecht, J-Bone. Go through the story again, but we'll be here another 3 hours. So I want to appreciate him coming on, and I hope you guys like it. Make sure you tune in to the Rewind show. We'll get that going. And I want to thank Raj for coming down. Won't see him for another 4 weeks again. But as always, we enjoy it. So thanks again, Jay. And we'll see you guys next time.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.